We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
What's going on, everyone? BuzzBeat episode 91. Cannot believe, guys, we're almost in triple digits for these episode numbers. It's crazy to think about that we've come this far. This is Richie, one third of the podcast.
Sorry to interrupt you midstream, Richie.
No, go ahead.
One more episode than points the Hornets scored at the Pacers
That's true.
We did do that. Four more when we get Papa John's pizza too, right? At least half off. All right.
Okay.
Sorry.
Yeah.
I had to put those in there.
So, like always, I'm joined by Brian, who just cut me off, and then Spencer as well. I just want to remind you guys that we are a proud member of the Blue Wire Network, and you can find more content on bluewirepods.com. On today's episode, episode 91, we'll be talking about the Pacers game from Monday night and also the trade deadline that kind of came and went with some inactivity on the Hornets' end. I know we tried to do something. There were some rumors out there, but nothing ever materialized with the Charlotte Hornets at the trade deadline. Before we begin, though, we wanted to make you guys aware of another sticker giveaway through Twitter. Check our handle at BuzzBeatPod for more details and directions on how you can enter. Doesn't hurt to at least try and kind of put your name in that pool right there. And we'll announce a winner sometime soon. So let's jump right into this episode. Let's go ahead and just do the Pacers game. We won't spend too much time on this. We'll probably spend a little bit more time on the trade deadline stuff. The Hornets played the Pacers Monday night. They lost 99-90. Like Brian said, only scored 90 points. This team actually failed to score 20 points in three of the four quarters. But we do have to give credit to the Pacers, who are, I think, like a top two or three defensive team in the NBA. So they definitely played a role in how we played on the offensive side. The Hornets were led by Kemba, Lamb, and Zeller, who combined for 73 of the 90 points. But we got absolutely no production from the bench. So watching this game, it was kind of pitiful to watch. Anytime Kemba and Lamb and Zeller hit the bench, it was a struggle for that bench team. So I guess I just want to talk some big picture stuff. I know we kind of talked about some of the same trends over and over again with these games. That's kind of how the Hornets do it. You know, there's not many glaring stuff that we can talk about that we haven't already talked about. I guess the one thing that I do want to talk about is just the load for Kemba in terms of just how much energy he has to expend, Spencer and Brian. He played 39 minutes, which is the second most in a regulation game this season. He only got 10 points from players off the bench collectively. And again, I don't want this to become the norm. I know that last season our bench was probably worse than this season. I think the bench unit is like seventh in the NBA in scoring. So I don't necessarily think this is like the norm, but just to see this game where anytime he would hit the bench, the Pacers would go on a run. And then anytime he would come back on the court, he had to be like extra aggressive. And then you have teams that double team him that already expend so much energy on the guy that gives so much for this team. And there was actually one play, cannot remember, it was the third quarter, I believe, where he wasn't even in the picture on your broadcast. It was a 4-on-4 taking place, and he just kind of stood at midcourt just catching his breath. So I guess my question to you guys is, how valid are these concerns when it comes to kind of Kemba kind of overexpending himself with this team? And do you guys even see this team winning a game in the playoff if this is becoming the norm with this team where you know, you can't get any production out of the bench, especially when you shorten that lineup.
Yeah, I mean, it's obviously a very valid concern, you know, for Kemba, you know, night after night really having to carry this load. I mean, especially against talent and teams that are just better than Charlotte, right? Like, he has to almost do everything. I mean, you have your outlier game like Atlanta on Saturday night where you get a contribution for, you know, from what seems like everyone. But yeah, I mean, this is concerning. The problem for Charlotte is there's no way to get past or around that, mm-hmm. especially when, you know, the competition really takes a jolt up. And to your point about the playoffs, I mean, no, I wouldn't project the Hornets to win, no matter who they played in the top four of the East. I wouldn't project them to win a playoff game right now.
Right.
You know, not unless they see some kind, you know, not unless Malik Monk, you know, comes out of a shell, or Nicholas Batum has an out-of-body experience for a few months here. I mean, so no, I mean, there's no proof in the pudding to show us that there's going to be another contributor, you know, to this team's effort outside of Kemba that's really going to move the needle. But yeah, I mean, this Indiana game, Richie, like specifically, I mean, I actually had about a page full of notes, although it was kind of a boring game. I mean, this has got to be the worst bench game for Charlotte all season, right? Like, maybe right. I'm missing one, but this was terrible. I mean, you know, I mean, Frank Kaminsky gets it. That, well, I want to talk about that in a minute. But,
yeah.
You know, Shelvin Mack, minus 20. Malik Monk, minus 20. MKG, minus 17. Miles Bridges, minus 13. I mean, they could do nothing. I mean, Charlotte's starters fought so hard to get him back in that game in the third quarter and really played great. And then the bench comes out in the fourth quarter, gets outscored 8-0. The game's over. I mean, that's just how, like, disheartening and defeating that has to be when you're Kemba Walker just watching from the bench. I mean, you know, he had 18 points in that third quarter.
Yeah.
Just single-handedly put that team on his back, and then just to watch the bench come in and just throw up all over themselves. I mean, I can't imagine, like, the mental hurdles you have to go through night and, you know, night in, night out with this supporting cast or lack thereof.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's disappointing, but it is what it is at this point. And I think Kemba knows that, and I think this team knows that, and I think the coaches know that. You know, it's hard to try to thread the needle between trying to stay competitive and fight for the playoffs and stay in these games while also getting Miles Bridges and Malik Monk valuable minutes in meaningful games, right? Like, that's a really tight rope to walk, and I think that's something that James Borrego is trying to do right now. So it's not a winning proposition when you look at it from, like, a 10,000-foot view.
Uh-huh. Yeah, no, Richie, I don't see even if some of those guys did perk up a little bit, like Spencer said, nothing short of one of them, you know, Nick Batum finding another gear, Malik Monk finding another gear. Like, outside of that, which I don't think any of that's going to happen in the next 2 months. No, I mean, I think this team has been, we've been saying it all year. They're like, they are locked in on the 7th or 8th seed and getting swept by the Bucks or the Raptors. Like, come on, those teams are insane. But, you know, hey, the Hornets will get what they want. They wanted 2 home playoff games, and they'll get that. So congrats for them. But yeah, like, with the Pacers game, like, you know, Kemba plays 39 minutes in this game,
yeah,
with 32% usage rate. So this was another high usage game for him. They're plus 11 with him on the court, and they lost by 9 in this game for a guy that played 80% of the game. It's like a little hard. It's like a riddle. You know what I mean? Jelvin Mack minus 20, Malik Monk minus 20. The bench goes a combined 3 of 16. As you guys know, you know, I'm still a supporter of Malik Monk. I don't know where that guy was last night.
No.
Like I thought that was, like, the most checked out he's looked. Mm-hmm. I was just like, where is, like, at least with Monk, even when he's sputtering, you at least, like, see him and feel him. Last night, it was like he, you know, was in the Nick Batum role of just very content to chill and play off of everybody. But, like, with Kemba in last night, 39 minutes, the Hornets, 115 points per 100 possessions, a net rating of plus 11. With Kemba off the court, a net rating of minus 113. So they're getting outscored by 1.13 points per possession with Kemba off the court. The Hornets score 37 points per 100 possessions with Kemba off the court in 9 minutes. Just a total, total dumpster fire. And let me just say this too, like, we've seen them match up with the Pacers now a couple times this year. As soon as Sabonis comes in off the bench, the game always changes with them. Sabonis kills them, and in the minutes with – there's now been 14 minutes with Sabonis on the court and Bismack on the court too. Pacers have a net rating of plus 38 points per 100 possessions with that situation up. Like, the Hornets – Bismack is just not a guy that can, like, consistently guard high pick and roll. And Sabonis is an amazing pick and roll big because he can short roll – He can and pass, he can short roll and shoot the little mid-range jumper. He can get all the way to the rim. He's wickedly efficient at the you know, in the paint, just an incredible offensive talent. That's such a big advantage for Indiana, having that dude. Like a guy that if he played more minutes would be an all-star this year coming off the bench. And it's going to help them, at least until they get into the hothouse of the playoffs, it's going to help them stomach some of the – you know, the absence of Oladipo. But yeah, no, look, I mean, this is the same broken record we've been listening to for how many years now. It's no surprise when it skips. This has been the formula with Kemba, with the Hornets for almost three full seasons now. I do think it's encouraging that the starters have played well. And since Cody got back, the starting lineup has been really, you know, the starting lineup or, you know, Cody, you know, even before he got back, Cody playing with Marvin, Kemba, Batum, and Jeremy Lamb. That's been really good. And that's something that the Hornets can certainly hang their hat on. But in terms of the playoffs, like, and short of Kemba turning into 2001 Iverson, you know, with a three-pointer, like, this team isn't winning but more than a game. And even that's like a huge stretch because they're just having to play against these – I mean, the Raptors and Bucks, these teams are no joke, man. Yeah. We need better load management with Kemba in Charlotte, but there aren't really any options to do that. I mean, could you imagine if this guy sat, what it would look like?
But that was the first thought that went through my mind. Okay, you know, Pacers are a playoff team. They're the third seed in the East currently as we speak, and you know, this is about the team that we would play. Obviously, we'd actually be playing a team that is better in the standings based off of where we're at right now. And watching that game last night, I'm just like, wow, there's no way that we're going to be able to pick up a game, even at home, with the way that we've played. And you mentioned Sabonis. And Sabonis, I think it was in the second quarter, he had like two or three fouls, like back to back to back. And he was in foul trouble. We were in the bonus, and he didn't come back until like the third quarter, a little bit later than they probably wanted him back. And like you said, the minute that he stepped on the court, the Pacers played a whole lot better. And a lot of times they even had like some smalls matched up on him in the post. I thought Kemba did the best he could guarding him sometimes, mismatching the post. But again, he is a beast down low and scoring in the paint. And clearly he just was too much for the Hornets in the limited minutes he was out there. Let's transition to Frank Kaminsky. Spencer, you about brought him up. The situation that he's in currently is definitely a weird one. He hadn't played since January 30th, and his role on this team was so sporadic. And what's interesting is he came in and actually played the four. I think this was, according to Basketball Reference, this was the first time he's ever played the power forward this season. And he just looked lost out there, whether it was the position, whether it was him just not fully in tune to the game. Biz had to tell him where to go at certain points during the game, and I'm just like, if Biz is having to tell you where to be on the court, that's probably not a good sign. So it's interesting to see that he actually played, and Hernan Gomez kind of feels like he's out of the rotation. And we talked about this earlier, Spencer, about kind of getting that continuity and picking a player and sticking with it. But Borrego loves to switch up his lineups. But for whatever reason, that backup center role seems to be the most convoluted on this team.
Yeah, and the timing of it, of Frank getting these 4 minutes, seems about as random as anything, right? Like, We just got past the trade deadline, and then past these ridiculous rumors of Frank getting a buyout on a rookie contract, which still keeps me up at night. And he gets 4 minutes of play over Willie Hernan Gomez, a guy who you basically have on a minimum deal and on a non-guarantee next year that I would assume you're going to guarantee that contract because it's so cheap, and he should be a part of, you know, your quote-unquote youth movement. It just makes no sense to me. So let me be conspiracy theorist, Spencer, here for just a second. So when the friction got really, really bad with the Hornets and Frank Kaminsky and his quote-unquote posse, which I have on good faith that it did and has, can I just guess and theorize that MJ stepped in and say, hey, everybody cool it here. Borrego, do we think we could just give him one more chance? Just give him one more chance, right? Like, I don't think that's what happened, but
yeah.
It was literally in the news about him getting a buyout, and then Kupchak asked about it the day after the trade deadline in his press conference, saying, you know, that's not in our plans, but if Frank's camp wants to talk about it, my door is open. Or, I mean, that's not the correct quote, something along those lines. And now he's playing in a game? Like, this is odd to me. It's like something obviously happened, positive, quote unquote, I would say, between Frank and the coaching staff or the front office, because to sit Willie and play him after all that just makes like literally zero sense to me. And whatever, it's not a big deal. It's 4 minutes, right?
Right.
But like the timing of it is just, it couldn't be more odd, I guess. Mm-hmm.
And it's even more odd because MJ couldn't watch him because he was watching the UNC Virginia game.
Well, that's I was too. I mean, I couldn't watch Frank, but I was like MJ, I probably wasn't too upset about it. Yeah.
Yeah. It's like, there's just, look, the Hornets have beyond Zeller and Marvin and MKG, they have no good options in the front court, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, Bismack, he can't do it. Willie has so many issues defensively, is just an objectively bad defensive center, one of the worst rotational defensive centers in all of the NBA. And yet, playing both of those guys makes more sense than Frank Kaminsky for a variety of reasons, all of which I should say Spencer just outlined. Like, he's not a good player, and he's not going to be back here next season. There's been a bunch of weird stuff that's come out of Charlotte the last couple of months with Frank, what, maybe looking for a trade or maybe the Hornets buying out his rookie contract, whatever. Like, it's just been weird. And I just think there's going to be I think if Frank's going to have any chance of getting his NBA career back on track, it's going to be outside of Charlotte. And I think the franchise will also look, Frank walking out the door is not going to make them better or worse, right? Like, they'll be the exact same. But it'll just be a breath of fresh air. I think he is his roster spot. I think he just, it's a constant reminder of opportunity cost. Do you know what I mean? And because of that, some of this isn't even Frank's fault. It's just like everyone knows based off, do you believe these reports or not? I tend to. Like, you know what the franchise missed out on because of him. You know what I mean? Because they drafted him. And, I don't know. Because of that, it's like he'll never get a shot. Look, I'm just as frustrated with his play and lack of development as anyone. But just like, it's almost like the guy never had a chance. But to be trotting him out there now like this, reeked of just, to me also, just Brego just being like, I don't know what to do. Like, I don't have any good options.
Yeah.
Let me just throw something at the wall and hope that it sticks. It didn't at all. I mean, like, it went very poorly with him in. And by the way, like, for a guy that should kind of be on thin ice, I would imagine, with the front office, with ownership, with the coaching staff, he wasted no time getting up shots. I mean, that's you can always guarantee that with Frank. Like, he comes in, first two possessions, he got up shots. He missed both of them, because of course he did. But like,
I agree with you, Brian. I think you're right. And by the way, like, my conspiracy theory, I'm not saying it because I actually believe it. I think you're right. I think Borrego is literally throwing stuff at the wall, being like, all right, well, maybe this will work. You know, when he sees it goes in, when he sees it go in, he can knock down a few. So, but yeah, it's super disappointing with Frank, no doubt.
One last, just real quickly, I've said this before, but like, it's a problem that this team's best or second best center, far and away, is Marvin Williams. Mm. Like, they've got four centers on this roster, and only one of them's good. You know,
it's disappointing that it's ended up like this with Willie to this point, because I would still defend that trade. You know, 2 seconds too much looking back on it, but for a contract that was going to be that cheap, it was worth a swing, right? It was worth a swing. And at the time, I kind of thought the Hornets hit a single with that one. It's not looking like that, today. But it the way this center rotation has played out, it couldn't be more disappointing, because you certainly looked at the roster and thought that was one of the deeper, more well-equipped positions going into the season. Mm-hmm. But like you're saying, Brian, I mean, look, the Frank Kaminsky thing, that draft pick set this franchise back a decade. And I could do an oral history with you about why that is, because some people are probably like, wait a minute, what? We won't go into all that. But it is a sunk cost now. It's a sunk cost. And I think regardless of how desperate you are to make the playoffs, if you're James Borrego, you need to just keep his butt on the bench. Like, he's not part of the future. Swallow the sunk cost, front office and coaching staff, and play the guys that are going to be here next year. That just is what it is. And if you end up missing the playoffs, it's not going to be because you didn't play Frank Kaminsky. Okay? So, like, just have to swallow that pill and give in to it. It just – when I saw that he played last night, and I didn't watch the game live, when I saw it late last night, it really did disappoint me. It did. I just don't see the reason for it.
It came out of nowhere. And I first thought, because, you know, we were losing, we weren't playing too well towards the end of that first quarter, that James Borrego just said, hey, let's just throw something at the wall and see if it sticks. And kind of like Brian's point, I feel like that's what it was. But again, this guy's not going to be part of our future. So what's the point in putting him out there? Because he clearly didn't make a difference. And putting him at the power forward, too, where a spot that he has not played all season, that's going to make it worse. That's going to make it worse.
The guy maybe still has a shot at an NBA career, but it's definitely playing backup five. Like, the days of this guy being a four, like, that got dragged on for way too long. Just way – I mean, like, Clifford kept trying that for years, it seemed like, and it never was ever going to work.
Exactly.
Just a few more things in this game, because I feel like we've just, like, hammered away at the negatives. I will say this, a few just quick bullet points. I think Charlotte continues to play hard. I think that they continue to show, you know, albeit their very obvious defensive liabilities, that they really compete consistently on that end of the floor, especially that starting group.
Yeah.
They're getting better. You know, they switch a lot. It's almost now to the point where it's a switching defensive scheme almost exclusively. And, you know, they're getting better when Kemba gets, you know, switched off into a bigger that takes him down to the post. The guy from the opposite end, you know, runs in, sends him out, and they're rotating and they're communicating on the back. I mean, that stuff, to me, when I watch it, it's cleaning itself up. It's looking better. And this was a good defensive performance for the Hornets last night. I mean, I don't think that should go covered up either, but it's the consistency, right? And we've talked about that already, you know, numerous times on this podcast. Look, the Hornets make 19 three-pointers Saturday night in Atlanta. They come to Indiana. I mean, they couldn't kick it in the ocean from the beach. I mean, it's just, you know, that's the stuff that's really losing Charlotte games. I don't think it's their effort. It's just the inconsistency across the board and certainly around Kemba Walker that they just can't get over that hurdle. I mean, a game like at Indiana, you just figure it out. You hit a few more shots, or really a lot of shots came out when I thought they were down in Indiana. So a few more of those fall and you get a huge road win that makes a little bit of a statement. But again, the inconsistency just keeps biting Charlotte.
They don't have enough stoppers on the perimeter. And sorry, Richie, but just do want to throw this in there. Kemba, 34 points, five straight games with 30 plus points now, right? So he's been unbelievable recently in those five games, 12 three-point attempts per game, shooting 43% on pull-up threes, 47% on catch-and-shoot threes, taking 24 field goal attempts per game over the last five games, too. 57% effective shooting. So Kemba's been ridiculous. When he plays like that, they have a chance. It just means they got to tax him a lot, too. Sorry for jumping in there, Richie. My bad.
No, I mean, and to all of your points, you know, the starters did play well in this game. I think they outscored the Pacers starters by 16. And, you know, like Spencer said, the consistency on the defensive end is just not there. It's almost like if Marvin or MKG are off the court, you could probably expect the defensive side to kind of suffer at least a little bit. And I actually thought Cody Zeller played an awesome game defensively. He got switched on to a couple of guards on the perimeter several times, and I thought he held his own very, very well. Let's go ahead and transition, guys, and we've got an announcement to make. Blue Wire is teaming up with Harry's to make sure our listeners are shaving comfortably. Go to harrys.com/bluewire to save $10 on a value trial set, which includes 1 5-blade razor, a rich lathering shave gel, and 1 travel blade cover. You'll get all of that for just $3 shipped right to your door. Enough with cheap razors. It's totally worth trying Harry's. And I can attest to this because my wife and I both use Harry's. We actually tried out all these different types of brands, and we wanted to get away from some of the more expensive brands that were just overpriced, and we've fell in love with Harry's. It's Simple, it's a clean design, quality blades. Actually, the Harry's founders were tired of paying for razors that were overpriced and overdesigned. They bought a world-class blade factory in Germany that's been making quality blades for over 95 years. So join the 10 million who have tried Harry's. Claim your trial offer by going to harrys.com/bluewire. All of Harry's blades come with a 100% guarantee. If you don't love your shave, let them know and they'll give you a full refund. Again, make sure you go to harrys.com/bluewire to redeem your razor for just $3.
Life can be stressful, but getting life insurance shouldn't be. That's why there's Ethos. Ethos is a modern kind of life insurance that's super fast, incredibly affordable, and very uncomplicated. At getethos.com, there are no medical exams for policies covering under $1 million. No hours of paperwork or meetings with pushy representatives either. It only takes 10 minutes to apply, and you can rest assured knowing you've taken the steps to protect your family. And in most cases with Ethos, you can have that peace of mind for less than a cup of coffee a day with no hidden fees. Having life insurance can free you from stress. Getting life insurance shouldn't cause it. Discover how uncomplicated life insurance can be at Ethos. Get your free instant quote and submit your complete application in minutes. Just go to getethos.com. That's E-T-H-O-S, getethos.com, getethos.com.
All right, so let's transition to the trade deadline. February 7th came and went, and the Hornets were the only Eastern Conference team that didn't make a trade. We've heard rumors about Marc Gasol coming here, but I'm sure there was some kind of dispute over some pick protection or maybe even the players that were involved. And that never materialized, and he was traded off to Toronto. So for better or for worse, that trade never happened. And then the Hornets in general just didn't make a trade. I actually thought they were going to try something even when the Gasol trade fell through. Maybe something for like Deadman. I'm surprised he didn't get traded. And when we played him the other night, he killed us from deep. But let me just speak strictly of the Marc Gasol trade that was kind of thrown out there, or at least we thought was thrown out there. Was there a deal out there that made sense to either of you guys if we were to trade for Marc Gasol? Or are you just happy that a trade never happened?
Well, I thought there was a deal out there that made sense for Charlotte for Marc Gasol. I mean, I think like Bismack Biyombo and Jeremy Lamb was the cleanest way to make it happen. And, a probably heavily protected first-round pick, which is, you know, Charlotte, in the end of all this, regardless of what player we're talking about, I think what's come out is that, and I applaud Kupchak for doing this, is he was playing really like harder hardball than we expected with that pick. I think he like wanted to top 20 protect it maybe this year. That would, you know, roll over to maybe like a top 16 or 17 protect, you know, weird protections that would give Charlotte a chance to succeed on the court and eventually proceed with, you know, how they want to build their franchise and not surrender a first round pick, right? Like that was probably the plan. And, you know, Memphis didn't want to do that, Dallas didn't want to do that with Harrison Barnes, and how can you blame them? But to the Marc Gasol thing, you know, I think that Memphis was looking for a collection of young players and contracts that down the road, if they weren't going to get a first round pick, which ended up being, you know, they couldn't, and contracts down the road along with those young players that they could flip in some kind of value and get a pick back, right? If it's 2 seconds, fine. It's a sunk cost at that point. But maybe we can take, you know, Valanciunas or I'm blanking on who else.
DeLon Wright.
DeLon Wright and C.J. Miles. Like, DeLon Wright's the young player they got, right? Like,
yeah.
You know, you can kick the tires on him and see he might earn a contract in Memphis.
He's a restricted free agent this summer, too.
Right. Yeah, exactly. I mean, that might be part of their future while they're building one brick at a time, because it's going to be a long rebuild there. And then they got Valanciunas and C.J. Miles. Both of those guys have a year and a half left on their deals. Well, those have both been very solid rotational players in the NBA. Who's saying they don't go get minutes in Memphis, perk back up, and now this time next year they're able to flip one of those guys? I think C.J. Miles, they might get a first-round pick for him if he sees the ball go in the bucket a lot, here in the next year or so. So I think it was the right deal for them to take over what Charlotte could offer. nobody wanted Bismack Biyombo. That was the chunk salary that they that Charlotte was going to have to throw in the Harrison Barnes deal or a Marcus All deal. And that's dead money. Like every other team in the NBA, regardless of how many minutes he's played in Charlotte this year and how he's actually been somewhat productive in those minutes, nobody else in the NBA sees any value in that money. It's dead. It's completely dead, right? So nobody wanted it. And that's really effectively why the Hornets weren't able to be competitive with Toronto for Marcus Gasol, is because we couldn't provide rotational guys, regardless of how much money they were making, that Memphis could eventually flip. And we couldn't provide a young player that we were willing to part ways with, like Delon Wright. We weren't going to part ways with Miles Bridges or Malik Monk. And so I think those two factors are really where the line in the sand was drawn. And I applaud Charlotte for not giving in and saying, okay, yeah, we'll give you a lot of protected first-round pick. Because guess what? Here's the thing. Charlotte is still going to be trying to improve the roster this summer when not just as many trades happen, but bigger trades happen in the summer, typically, than they do at the trade deadline. Mm-hmm. So now, and you pointed this out on Twitter, Richie, it's not the worst thing in the world if the Hornets miss the playoffs, right? By a half game or a game or whatever it ends up being, and now they're in the lottery, and now they get a little bit lucky and have a decent pick. Well, now that's a great asset to have. And now maybe the type of player that you would put Malik Monk in a deal with that first-round pick becomes available, and now you're looking back and you're like, man, I sure am glad we didn't give that pick away for a half a season of Marc Gasol.
Right.
You know, so there's no rush for the Hornets, I guess is what I'm saying. They're going to stink for the rest of the season regardless of what deal they make at the deadline.
Yeah. The in like to Richie, the point that Richie brought out on Twitter, like, yeah, it would certainly not be the worst thing. You know, maybe it would maybe hurt stuff with Kemba in the summer, but like this team needs – young talent. It's one of the reasons why I'm glad they didn't trade the first round pick, actually. And having a you know, a run at the lotto machine, that would be great. This is sort of like the weird this sort of like weird vacuum created by the East having as many playoff teams as the West, but not being nearly as deep. You have franchises that need to make should be in the lottery, like the Hornets, but they miss out on it because they can still make the playoffs at the seventh or eighth seed. I like the thought of the Hornets not including Malik Monk, not, you know, throwing in depending on the protections, like a certain kind of first round pick, because I just think it would have been throwing money at a short term fix, and I don't think it would have moved the needle much. Like maybe you get up to the sixth seed at best. Even then, I mean, do you like the Hornets to win more than a game against any of these against?
Right.
Boston, against Toronto, against Indiana, like maybe Indiana, but I don't know. And I know Gasol looked good last night for the Raptors. I watched him play a little bit of that game against the Nets, but like I just don't think he would have moved the needle. I think he and Kemba would have been really good together. Marc Gasol still a good player, still a useful player. And obviously there's risk with not pulling a trade because Kemba could turn around and say, look, man, I need you guys to do something for me at the deadline. You couldn't swing a deal. The only thing would be, look, if you're trying to trade for Marc Gasol at age 34 in 2019, and you got to decide whether you want to give up, you know, future assets for this guy or not, like that, making that move is not a solution. Do you know what I mean? Like it is a temporary quick fix, and something that we talked about this on episode 89, like something that they've just done too much of. Yeah. The last decade, and it was good to see them walk. It's okay to walk away from the table, man. Like it's okay to do that, even if it's going to frustrate parts of the fan base. And I also do wonder too. And I have no idea. Like I'm not like close enough to the team to know these things intimately or not. But like I do wonder. And so perhaps it is reckless for me to speculate on this. But like I do wonder if this is an advantage of having a guy like Mitch Kupchak at general manager, as opposed to someone like Rich Cho, that if Michael Jordan is itching for a trade, Mitch Kupchak can say no. You know, I have no idea. I don't know. I could be way off on that assumption, but like, that's a good thing in a general manager to say like, no, this isn't a fix. Like we gotta take a slightly bigger picture view of where the franchise is and where they're going. And look, I can obviously Gasol would have helped. It would have been exciting to see he and Kemba play together. who knows with Malik Monk? I still think there's a ton of untapped potential. And having to also say this too, having the pick be top 20 protected makes, you know, would have made a lot more sense. I couldn't understand why it was a huge snag for Memphis that it'd be protected lottery, because it was like, well, the Hornets are probably going to make the playoffs.
Right,
they get Gasol.
Right.
They're definitely – I couldn't get that. That hang-up didn't make much sense to me. Now, assuming it was top 20 protected, well, that's a whole
– different ball,
you know, game. That's a whole different ball game. You know, look, like I said, it's a bit of a risk because, you know, Kemba could walk this summer, and that would be a tough – I don't think he's going to, but he totally could, and he wouldn't be wrong to do so. But – you know, look, that wasn't the fix. They didn't miss the thing that's going to solve the franchise or reroute them in a different direction or even improve them that much beyond a margin this season. So
yeah,
I'm okay with them stepping back. It was okay.
Yeah, I agree with you, Brian. And I just really quickly respond to your comment about Kupchak and Jordan. I don't think it's reckless to assume that. And look, we're just throwing darts here, right?
Yeah,
but
right.
That seemed like the front office practicing abstinence when they have not very much in the past. Like, for the fans that are like, look, Charlotte got, you know, they got to the goal line and then, but no one wanted to do business with them because we're a joke. No, it's not that simple. Like, Marc Gasol was tied so closely to Charlotte. The deal was there for Charlotte if they wanted to give up something certain. And we already talked about what that was. They didn't want to give that up. And good for them for not backing down. You know, because I think the betting men out there would have guessed, yeah, all the Hornets are going to sell their souls to get freaking Marc Gasol for half a season. They want to win that bad. So that was surprising to me. I think it's good. I think it's fine to assume that, Brian. Number two is this. Like, what I was saying a minute ago about the summer, think about it this way. The Hornets are one of those teams. Picture them as a vulture. All right, you've got Kevin Love, who now gets not quite half a season, but a little less than half a season to come back and show us what he's got left coming off of an injury at his age. You know, he's signed long-term. I think that Cleveland wants to trade him. He's been linked to Charlotte. I would watch that. I would watch your Portlands and your Philadelphias and your Bostons of the world. Let me just point something out real quick. If any of those teams lose in the first round or even the second round, there's going to be change in those franchises, and they're going to make trades. And I think if you're Charlotte, you a team like Charlotte, you should watch that closely. And teams are just more willing to make a serious pivot in the summer rather than in the middle of the season. That's just history tells us that.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I think when Charlotte doesn't make that deal at the deadline, I think they just keep so many more options on the table. And not that I'm absolutely convinced they're going to do something this summer, but I do think there will be more opportunities to get a C.J. McCollum or a Jimmy Butler or a Gordon Hayward. Or, I mean, like, there's somebody is going to be very – there's so many contenders this year. Mm-hmm. Somebody's going to be disappointed in the result of their season.
Mm-hmm.
And right. I think Charlotte can get into a conversation like that. And that's just something to keep in the back of your mind as a Hornets fan.
I don't think I want anything to do with Gordon Hayward moving forward. To me, it feels like that injury has just completely affected him. And
yeah. Well, I agree. I'm just kind of throwing names.
Yeah. No, I know.
Yeah.
But he's an interesting situation how, like, that injury has just changed his whole game. But
man, it is just – he hadn't looked right at all this whole season, man.
No.
I mean, not anywhere close.
But I think if you're Charlotte, though, like, that – he's almost the if he can just
oh
show
totally.
He's the perfect roll of the dice, right?
Yeah. I'm speaking about two separate things. Plus, he's a brand name. He's a guy that, you know, the franchise has a little bit of history with because they did sign him to an offer sheet back in 2014. So yeah, like there's history. It would make sense. You know, he wouldn't be a hard, you know, quasi star to sell to the region. That's for sure. So yeah, I can see that. The side thing being like, you know, Boston's title hopes are like kind of screwed, and that guy, unless that dude, like, you know, magically turns into his old self here, you know, in the next 2 months basically.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So I have a question for you guys, and you know, looking back on the non-trade, the trade that did not happen, and I think that you guys kind of pointed this out, like making a deal for just the sake of making a deal just didn't make sense. And I think that many fans will argue that Kemba needs help, which he does. I mean, I don't think we can argue against that. And by not making a move, you're hurting his chances of not coming back in the offseason. So I understand these concerns and where these fans are coming from, but I would hate for that to be the only motive when it comes to approaching the trade deadline. And like we just stated, you know, Mitch didn't give in. He didn't give in. He was not going to part ways with Monk or Bridges, which I wouldn't have either, in a first-round pick as well. But what do you say to those fans that say, hey, because we didn't make a trade, now Kemba has, like, dramatically decreased his chances of coming back to Charlotte? Do you guys have any thoughts on that for those people that say, hey, well, by doing this or by not doing this, Kemba's pretty much gone to New York or wherever?
I mean, I had like a Twitter rant the other day. I don't know if it was the day after the trade deadline. I can't remember what day it was, but I just had all these thoughts in my mind. I was like, I need to get these out right now before I lose them. So I think to the idea of that, I think you should, when Kemba says, you know, I want to stay in Charlotte, I want to prove people wrong, I love this place, I want to do it here, blah, blah, blah. I believe him. I've said that many times. I think that him, Mitch Kupchak, Michael Jordan have had conversations that are something along the lines of, look, man, we're not going to be ready to win a championship in 2 years. Probably not 3 years. 4 or 5, I think we could compete. My point is, I think Kemba knows where this franchise is.
Right.
I think he knows, he understands that the limitations here, just like Mitch Kupchak does. And I think that he could be committed to being in this for the long run with Charlotte. Like, I don't think that's impossible to think about. So when you're one of those people that says, well, we didn't, and there's even national people that, like, I really respect that are just like, it's so disappointing the Hornets came up short at the trade deadline, blah, 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 blah. Same thing. I look at those people. I'm like, you're really not looking at the bigger picture here. Or it's lazy. It's just lazy analysis to me. Kim has said all this the whole time about loving Charlotte. Why would he say all that if for something like not getting Mark Gasol at the trade deadline is going to completely flip his decision and make him walk? Right?
Right.
Like, those two factors don't add up. Yeah, if we're talking about getting Kawhi Leonard at the trade deadline, you know, that's totally different. But Mark Gasol or Harrison Barnes is not getting you even to the second round of the playoffs. So to think all of a sudden after you've heard Kemba Walker, you know, be on all these great quotes about Charlotte for however many months it is now. If you think that after the trade deadline with the players the Hornets were linked to is now going to, change his mind because we weren't able to get those deals done, I would just ask you to dig a little bit deeper and not be so emotional with that opinion. You know, and that's hard to do. Like,
right.
I battle that as a fan too, right? Like, I was disappointed. I thought we could improve this roster at the deadline. It didn't happen. I don't think that's going to change Kemba Walker's decision, but the Hornets, when it comes to free agency with Kemba Walker, they got to get him in the room at 12:01, and they got to get him to sign. Can't let him walk out. That's really the key.
We all hope that Kemba would know that just by acquiring Gasol, you might go from winning no games in the playoffs to winning one game, and that's not going to be the big deal breaker for Kemba in this offseason. So I think we're counting on Kemba being smart enough that deal, like you said, Spencer, the one that didn't go through, sure, it could boost us up a spot or a standing in the playoffs. It could give us one or two games in a series. But in terms of kind of affecting this team long term, it really doesn't do it for you. And Brian says this a lot, too. Like, let's say Kemba does walk in the offseason. At least that gives us a clear picture of how we're going to approach this and move forward this offseason and upcoming offseason. So, Brian, you know, what do you say to those fans that say, hey, you know, we should have made a move just for the sake of helping Kemba out?
Yeah, I get the frustration. The thing is, the bottom line is, like, we just don't know. And I said this on episode 89. It's like, you know, to assume that Kemba thought that a Marc Gasol trade would have, like, really, like, improved their odds and outlook this season, it would have assumed that he's really gullible, you know what I mean, and that he's not a smart basketball player. I don't think either of those things are true, you know what I mean? Like, I think Kemba is a genius basketball player, and I think he is, like, an upright, smart human being, you know? I think it's just as likely that they could have traded for Gasol, and he could have walked after the season, and you could have been out of first-round pick.
Yep.
So for a lot of the people that were like, I, like Spencer said, like, I get the angst, I get the frustration, and I'm not trying to knock those people for that, but just know that, like, it's impossible to predict, you know, what he's going to do in a couple of months and how much he would have valued a Gasol trade or not. And look, who's to say that they didn't run this stuff by Kemba? You know what I mean? Like, while they're in negotiations and stuff like that, you know, with the trade, that they couldn't say, hey, look, hey, Kemba, like, what do you think about, like, if he's this important to the franchise, then he's got to be at least, like, tangentially involved in those conversations, you know? So we don't know that. Here's what we do know. He's spoken very positively about Charlotte, and the Hornets can offer the most money, period. Those are the things that we do know. What we don't know is what he thinks about the trade or the no trade or what he's going to do in July. We have no clue on any of that. And anyone who's trying to say that they do outside of Kemba and his agent or his mom or whatever, they are lying because they don't bleep and know. What we do know is that even though he's heading into unrestricted free agency for the first time in his career, we know that he likes the city. He likes this franchise. He's a good dude. And the Hornets can offer the most money in the most years. Those are the facts, all right? Everything else is conjecture. And anyone else who was coming out with super hot takes about, you know, this was a big miss, like, you're being reactionary. And I would heed just a little bit of a little bit of caution would probably be good. And look, he still might leave. And people can come at me and say I'm dumb for advocating for no trade. And that's fine. We can be results-based, you know, jerks. That's totally cool. It won't change from what the mentality should have been at the deadline in February. And that's my point.
That's very well said, Brian. And guess what? If Kemba leaves, at least the franchise finally has a direction. Like, sorry.
Exactly.
People are going to stone me for that one, but, like, at least we know which direction we're going now, that is the rebuild. And the small market city of Charlotte will survive a rebuild, I promise. It'll be tough, all right? There won't be a lot of butts in the seats, but we'll survive it.
There aren't many butts in the seats this year already. And, like,
what's the big
difference? You know, it didn't take long for it took a year of the Hawks doing this. And now look at the Hawks.
Yeah.
Look at the Hawks. I don't want to ever be in one of those. Like, I think because I'm a guy that's, like, publicly defended the process in Philadelphia and stuff, that people assume that I just want, like, a rebuild at all times. Like, I just want to do that. That's not the case. I would like for the Hornets to be a 60-win juggernaut with four All-Stars like the Warriors. Like, that would be dope. But, like, if you're juxtaposing 37 wins with, like, finishing somewhere from 7 through 10 in the East to, like, maybe trying something that empirically has been proven to give you the best odds of drafting star players, which is the only way the Hornets, outside of a blockbuster trade, can get a guy to come to Charlotte. Like, you got to see, Memphis is going through this now. Mm-hmm. Atlanta's doing this. These markets are facsimiles to Charlotte in terms of the NBA, both in terms of region and size and stuff like that.
Hell, I'd say Memphis is much smaller.
It is. It's the smallest, and it's in a city that I don't believe Memphis to be growing either, too. Yeah. right. But, which is not the case in Charlotte or Atlanta, obviously. But, like, I've just never bought into the notion that if you rebuild, it's going to ruin everything. Like, this franchise has had so much. The fact that anyone's still here, you know what I mean? There's still lots of people still here lining up saying, we like the Hornets, man. We want to watch the Hornets. We want to talk about the Hornets. We want to read the Hornets. We want to wear Hornets gear. We want to buy season tickets, like, all that stuff. Anyone can survive a rebuild, and you're crazy to think that that you won't be able to do that. That said, it would be great if they could re-sign Kemba come July, obviously.
No doubt. All right, well, that was good. Let's transition to kind of the last part of the episode here. I just want everybody to give, and I'll start us, just kind of celebrate here being on the eve of All-Star Weekend in Charlotte, which is really, really cool, and actually a really good segue to kind of the market size conversation. I think this is a big opportunity for Charlotte. But, yeah, let's just get, like, two sentences from all of us, and then we'll wrap. Look, this is, like, really important. It's actually kind of just hit me today. Like, oh, man, we're here. Like, All-Star Weekend is in Charlotte. Here's Charlotte's chance, not only to the basketball world and the NBA, but also to a lot of guys and younger players in this league to kind of show what this city, the state, you know, this fan base can bring. I don't think a lot of them understand, Brian, to your point, how much this place is growing, how good of a place it is to live. And I think this is Charlotte's chance finally to kind of prove that to the league. It's a huge opportunity. I think it's going to go great. It's awesome to have Kemba Walker, you know, obviously starting in the All-Star game, and to have Miles Bridges, you know, the one shining young talent, I think, on this roster, in the dunk contest Saturday night. So it would be wonderful if both those guys showed out, if Miles was able to win the dunk contest, as Kemba somehow, some way won MVP, and you just couldn't write enough good puff pieces on how good Charlotte did in the All-Star game. That would, regardless of the rest of the season, I think that would really go a long way for this city. But it is very exciting. And, I hope some of the fans out there, the Hornets fans that are listening, are able to get out, this weekend and see some stuff. If you're not able to go to the game or Saturday night, there's tons of festivals downtown. I mean, on every corner, they're going to have something celebrating the weekend. So get out, celebrate. Look, we're all sad from time to time being Hornets fans, right? But, this is our time to be happy and celebrate and kind of rep our city. So I think we should take advantage of it.
Hey, I will say that I'm actually going to the Rising Stars Challenge on Friday night. So I kind of lucked out there. My friend has season tickets, and he invited me to go to that game. Unfortunately, there's no Hornets that are participating in that game, or at least not to my knowledge. And, I mean, I don't blame them for not having Monk or Bridges in there. At least we could see Bridges at the dunk contest. And so, I think that's going to be a good experience for Charlotte. I'm excited to go Friday night just to kind of take in all the festivities and see it happen. It's probably going to be a whole lot different kind of taking it in live versus kind of from your couch. And I don't know. I've always liked the All-Star Weekend. It's probably not the best All-Star game or the All-Star Weekend, but I'm so glad that it's here in Charlotte.
It's a showcase for the city, and I mirror everything you guys said. It's a good. It could be a boon for the franchise. That we'll see. Going forward.
All right, guys. Thanks again for tuning in to another BuzzBeat podcast. We truly appreciate all the support you've been giving us, especially since we've switched over to Blue Wire. Be sure to give us a rating and review on iTunes. It really does go a long way. You guys might not think it does, but it does. The Hornets have one more game before the break on Thursday in Orlando. So it'd be nice to enter that All-Star break on a high note as the Hornets gear up for that playoff push. They want that 7th and 8th seed, right, guys? So for Brian, for Spencer, I am Richie. We will see you guys next time. Go Hornets.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile. And the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time. There's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.